Let America's oldest nationwide long-distance moving company solve your moving problem.
Over the nation, any day, ship the certified performance way. There's just one company you can call
for certified performance.
Certified in writing.
American Red Ball.
Call.
Call
for Red Ball.
American Red Ball Band.
On Thursday at this time, another report on outer space brought to you by American Red Ball and your local American Red Ball agent, who offer you complete peace of mind moving service. Frank Edwards reporting. Stay tuned to Mutual for all the news.
The small group of unidentified flying objects which flew over and around Washington, D.C. on the night of July 19th, 1952 made headlines all over the world. Here was the capital of a great nation, unable to prevent unknown aerial objects moving at will overhead. When jets were finally able to reach the capital, after being recalled from some sort of chase over Delaware, the jets found themselves helpless. The unidentified flying objects simply streaked away into the darkness at speeds no jet could match. A few nights later, the things were back, and this time no jets were sent up, because the official policy had been directed at pretending that things do not exist, which was about all that could be done, since they easily outflew the jets. The mass flights of unidentified flying objects over Washington, D.C. in late July of 1952 made world headlines. They were variously explained away as temperature inversions, reflections of traffic lights on low clouds, and other odds and ends that failed to fit the circumstances then or since. But those sightings brought about a wall of censorship which remains unbroken to this day. A wall which senators and congressmen find impenetrable. How tightly that censorship was woven was clearly shown in August of 1952, just about 2 weeks after the sightings that had made the headlines. On the night of August 13, 1952, 68 unidentified flying objects were over the city of Washington, D.C. They were tracked on radar. They were photographed with some of the special cameras built for that purpose. They were watched by the pilots of commercial airliners using the National Airport. But the censorship was so tight that not an inkling of the fantastic event ever got into any newspaper. I was in Washington at the time, and I had many excellent contacts who had been able to provide me with such tips on previous occasions. But the first I heard of this historic 1952 incident was in October of 1954, when a high government official gave me a copy of a booklet compiled and printed by the Civil Aeronautics Administration for the guidance of radar operators and other selected government personnel, entitled A Study of Unidentified Targets Observed on Air Traffic Control Radar. It tells the whole dramatic story of that night when the flying saucers swarmed over Washington. In April of 1958, a dozen chunks of ice came whistling to Earth and buried themselves in the lawn of Mr. and Mrs. Leo Kozlowski in Napa, California. Some of the pieces were 12 inches in diameter. Experts agreed that it could not have been the thin rime ice that sometimes forms on planes. There was no explanation for it. On July 30th, 1957, a farmer named Edwin Groff, who lived near Reading, Pennsylvania, was working in a field near his house when he heard a strange whistling sound. A moment later, a 50-pound chunk of ice, about 2 feet in diameter, smacked into the field only a short distance from where he stood. He called his wife. As they examined the first piece of ice, a second piece, only slightly smaller, came whistling down. They called the sheriff called the Air Force called a meteorologist, and he guessed that it might have been carried across country on the jet stream, that great river of air that flows from west to east around the world. It was an interesting theory, but it had to be abandoned, for even the jet stream is incapable of carrying chunks of ice suspended in midair. Not even a plane could drop two such pieces side by side in the same field at intervals of 2 minutes. Ed Groff's icebox came thudding down on July 30th, 1957. On August 14th, more ice came down, this time in even more formidable chunks at Gowan City, Pennsylvania. And on September 8th, a whopping chunk of ice roared through the roof of a warehouse in Chester, Pennsylvania, like the others, defying explanation. This was not a localized phenomenon by any means. The British got a sample of it in November 1950 between Devon and Somerset, when out of a clear, chilly sky came hundreds of chunks of ice, some of it razor sharp. Edward Latham called authorities, for some of his sheep had been killed by the ice.
The authorities found a couple of tons of ice scattered around, largely in one field. They promised to investigate and explain. Exactly 2 weeks later, another massive chunk of ice crashed through the roof of a garage in Wandsworth, near London. And it crashed with such violence that a bomb was reported. The British Air Ministry investigated and finally reported to Parliament, this phenomena is one of the biggest mysteries of the century. Direction, so collisions are inevitable. Only the vastness of the distances and the comparative minuteness of the space bodies reduces the collisions to rarities. Yet we know that a collision between the Earth and a celestial body much smaller than the Moon would destroy both bodies in a blinding flash, reducing them to the sort of rubble which now pervades a band of our own solar system, masses of jagged iron and stone tumbling around in orbit between Mars and Jupiter. By some scholars, it is suspected that these asteroids were once part of a sizable planet which had the misfortune to ram into another celestial body and explode. Still, other students of such matters hold that the asteroids, about 30,000 in number, were never anything but what they are now, just space junk that failed to form into a unified body. From time to time, the Earth has sustained collisions with fairly large bodies. The famed meteor crater near Winslow, Arizona, is the result of such an accident, which gouged out a hole that's a mile across and 600 feet deep. Scientists say that it happened between 15 and 20,000 years ago, and they estimate the weight of the meteor at 10 million tons. Evidently, it was a cluster of chunks of iron, large and small, and it smashed almost vertically into the desert with such force that it threw blocks of stone weighing 5,000 pounds, as much as a mile, from the crater. Since no sizable mass of iron has ever been located in or under the crater itself, it is probable that the great heat generated by the impact vaporized most of the metal. Huge and awesome though the Arizona crater is by human standards, the meteor that made it is mere buckshot compared to some of the countless other dark bodies that roam the far reaches of the universe. We know that unknown bodies capable of destroying the Earth by accidental collision do exist in the universe, and that upon occasion they sometimes cross through our own solar system. But we also know that our chances of being involved in such a collision are very, very small, about like our chances of getting a tax reduction. Observatory in Washington picked up faint radio signals from Venus in 1956, the same year that Ohio State University reported receiving signals from Venus, which, they said, closely resembled radio telegraphy in many ways. Since then, we have bounced radar beams off Venus and the Moon with varying degrees of success. At best, these proceedings could afford us little real knowledge of the target itself. But they may have served another purpose, one that we never intended, that of alerting beings somewhere in space to what we are doing. Now, television signals are relatively restricted in their coverage. A TV station with a coverage radius of 150 miles is a rarity indeed. So it is understandable that television viewers in England were quite surprised to see on their picture tubes in September 1953 the station identification card and call letters of television station KLEE in Houston, Texas, thousands of miles away. For several days, at short periods each day, the signals came in strong. Many viewers photographed the freak reception. British authorities were queried, but they attached little significance to the incident at first, since long-range television pickups can happen. But when the British authorities contacted KLEE on the matter, they got a real surprise. For KLEE, Houston, Texas, had gone off the air in 1950, and the station which succeeded it informed the British that no KLEE identification card had been televised at any time since that date. The British ruled out the possibility of a hoax because of the excessive cost, the ease of detection, and the heavy risk involved. A spokesman for the British Broadcasting Corporation told newsmen, "The circumstances in this case are at variance with accepted knowledge of television transmission. It is unthinkable," he said, "that these signals could have been circling the Earth for the 3-year period since they were last broadcast. They could not have been reflected to us from any celestial body at such a vast distance.
That leaves us with but one possibility, however bizarre, that these signals were transmitted to us purposefully and intelligently from a source and for a purpose presently unknown.
Harvard Observatory publishes a very fine monthly magazine, Sky and Telescope. In a recent issue, it carried a photograph made by an amateur astronomer who was intrigued by a peculiar formation on the moon. The photograph shows quite clearly a white cross, the arms of which are of approximate equal length. It stood out clearly against the darker background of the moon mountains around it. The magazine ventured the supposition that it might be due to a couple of mountain ridges crossing each other at right angles. If it is, then it constitutes a geographical oddity for which there is no precedent, a defiance of the physical laws which govern the formation of mountains. And if it is not, then what is it? Or, for that matter, what was it that famed astronomer Schroeder saw while observing the lunar Alps? As recorded in Popular Science, Schroeder says that he first saw a light, which he watched for several hours and carefully marked on his map. Later, when that part of the moon was flooded with sunlight, he found a dark spot or object where the light had been, as though the light itself had been illumination at the bottom of a pit. The lunar crater Gassendi, under certain lighting conditions, presents a baffling spectacle. It looks, as many astronomers have noted, like a huge city with clearly defined roadways of immense size, roadways running past scores of low rectangular projections that give the appearance of vast buildings neatly laid out in geometrical patterns. The whole thing is eerie, as though one was getting an aerial view of a city of, by, and for giants. In recent years, especially since the middle 1930s, students of the moon have been intrigued by the strange white objects known now as moon domes, for want of a better name. At first they were called hills, but that has been dropped. Domes has replaced it, which may be very fitting, for a hill is a natural object, and a dome can be either natural or artificial. These moon domes are generally at the limit of visibility, tiny white hemispheres with dark pits at the top. To be seen at all, they must be between 600 and 1,000 feet in diameter. Sometimes they vanish from one place to pop up elsewhere, another in the long series of moon mysteries.
From Chicago to Bombay with ultrasonic speed, KO Mutual news reporters cover the world. Now, from Washington, D.C., here's Frank Edwards reporting for KO News Action Center.
Across the nation and around the world, Mutual News was there when it happens and where it happens. Bye for a special space science report, sponsored by American Red Ball, pioneers in the moving industry, providing you with complete peace of mind moving service. Now the news. $25,000 reward offered for Little Rock bombers. Senate moves to extend Civil Rights Commission despite bitter Southern opposition. House passes public works measure similar to those already vetoed. Stock market drops $5 billion today. Jamaica hires professional rainmakers to combat the worst drought in 100 years. Now for my special report. The long list of oddities that fall from the sky are so varied that they are almost unbelievable. Take the experience of William Shannon and George Brinsmade, professional illustrators who were driving to work at the RCA Service Company in Alexandria, Virginia. As they sped along the smooth Mount Vernon Highway near the nation's capital that morning, all of a sudden there came a crash, a hole in the windshield, and a frozen fish 10 inches long on the floor of the car. It had come straight down like a bomb, with such velocity that it had knocked a hole a foot square in the shatterproof windshield. There were no cars around, no airplanes, and no explanations. Just the frozen fish, the broken windshield, and two badly rattled artists who promptly drove right back home for the day. Having been taught that the sky does not contain fish, frozen or otherwise, we are understandably reluctant to accept such incidents at face value. Yet we must remember that even as late as 1805, professional astronomers refused to accept the reality of stones that fell from the sky. Objects now commonly known as meteorites. The astronomers said there were no stones in the sky, therefore no stones could fall from the sky. But they did fall, and it remained for the famed French physicist and academician Biot to open the eyes of his fellow scientists. Biot examined a fall of stones and confirmed that they had indeed come from the skies, just as the ignorant peasants had been reporting for centuries.
In 1921, pieces of shiny white metal came tinkling down in Portland, Oregon, accompanied by sizable chunks of ice, all of it falling into an area about 100 feet square. But where it came from, nobody knows. Hundreds of pounds of shredded flesh fell on the property of an amazed and annoyed rancher named Hudson, who lived in Los Nacitos Township, California, on August 9, 1869. The flesh was in very thin strips and flakes, ranging from the size of a dollar to the size of a man's hand. Investigators noted that it had fine black bristles on one edge, but they could offer no explanation as to where it had come from. We have hardly scratched the surface of the astounding list of items that have fallen and continue to fall from the skies. Unable to explain them, science does the next best thing. It ignores them.
Over the nation, any day, ship the certified performance way. There's just one company you can call
for certified performance.
Certified in writing.
American Red Ball.
Call.
American Red Ball Band.
All of your possessions will arrive safely when American Red Ball gets the call. You see, American Red Ball offers you certified performance, your guarantee in writing that every item will arrive at its new destination in perfect condition. Now, only American Red Ball offers you this certified performance. So, for real peace of mind on moving day, move the American Red Ball way. Your local American Red Ball agent is an expert capable of solving any moving problem. You'll find him listed in the yellow pages of your telephone book. For peace of mind on moving day, make sure American Red Ball gets the call.
On Thursday at this time, I'll present another report on outer space. This program has been brought to you by American Red Ball and your local American Red Ball agent.
From Chicago to Bombay with ultrasonic speed, KO Mutual News reporters cover the world. Now, from Washington, D.C., here's Frank Edwards reporting for KO News Action Center.
Across the nation and around the world, Mutual News is there when it happens and where it happens. Bye for a special space science report, sponsored by American Red Ball, pioneers in the moving industry, providing you with complete peace of mind moving service. Now the news.
Deadly, warns Admiral Rickover. Six injured in gas blast as it rips Denver business building. House moves toward approval of higher interest rates on government savings bonds. Senator Morse denounces labor bill in 4 hours speech. Senate vote expected tomorrow. Now, for a special report. Is there life on the moon? You will notice that the Russian and American moon rockets, both under radio control, veered off course so that they missed the moon completely. Since the president's own scientist advisors had urged him to see that our rockets did not strike the moon, it was the course of our moon rocket by radio so that the Russian rocket deliberately missed the lunar orb. This sudden interest in the moon, what evidence do we have that there might be sentient beings there? Let's look at the record. It is a long and voluminous record. Among other things, the countless lights which have appeared on the moon and which are still seen there from time to time. In 1869, there was a Reich. The lights appeared on the dark portion of the moon, all times in geometric patterns, circles, triangles, squares, and straight lines, and with varying intensity as though they were under intelligent control. The flood of reports resulted in action by the Royal Astronomical Society, which asked all its members to join in a 3-year program, charting and reporting these lights in the hope that their meaning, if they were signals, might be deduced. The lights are still with us. In 1935, the craters Aristarchus and Copernicus were flooded with a weird glow long before sunrise on the moon. In 1941, there was the bright speck seen moving into the crater Gassendi. In 1945, astronomers watched 3 very bright lights on the wall of the crater Darwin. In November 1958, observers reported that half the darkness in the crater Albatragius was suddenly replaced by a glow of soft light, as though great floodlights had been turned on. Baffling, too, are the ubiquitous white domes, which have been charted on the moon since 1930. After 1945, their number grew rapidly. They are especially numerous in the region of Arago, the Prinz Mountains, and Oceanus Procellarum. Through telescopes, the domes look like shiny white plastic bubbles. varying in size from about 600 feet in diameter up to some that from time to time clusters of them vanish only to crop up again in a new location. In 1959, a top scientist of research and development said, "We must approach the moon with caution, for we may find intelligent opposition there."
Certified in writing,
American Red Ball.
Call the Red Ball,
American Red Ball Band.
All of your possessions will arrive safely when American Red Ball gets the call. You see, American Red Ball offers you certified performance, your guarantee in writing that every item will arrive at its new destination in perfect condition. Now, only American Red Ball offers you this certified performance. So, for real peace of mind on moving day, move the American Red Ball way. Your local American Red Ball agent is an expert capable of solving any moving problem. You'll find him listed in the yellow pages of your telephone book. For peace of mind on moving day, make sure American Red Ball gets the call.
On Thursday at this time, I'll present another report on outer space. This program has been brought to you by American Red Ball and your local American Red Ball agent.